Welcome to The Rot Focus, a podcast for rotters, newbies, and veterans, and everyone in between. We're hosted by M.A. Lee with the assistance of Remy Black and Edie Rooms, all from Rotters, Inc. Books. Our focus is productivity, process, craft, and tools. Each episode lasts as long as it takes to fix a quick dinner, grab a short commute, or take a brisk walk. Resources and links are in the show notes. Visit us at therotfocus.blogspot.com. Now, on to this week's episode. We're approaching the finale of our examination of Rotters defeating Rotters Block. We've diagnosed the three major issues, how to recognize them, and how to resolve them to return to writing. We've examined advice from 10 different writers, from Neil Gaiman to Barbara Kingsolver and Charlene Harris to Philip Pullman. We've delved deeply into famous blockbuster Earl Stanley Gardner's techniques as he dealt with the unmentioned unmentionable. Mary Stewart revealed the writer's life in her short novel, The Stormy Petrel, and we analyzed Stewart's covert and overt advice. The great storyteller, story teacher, Kate Wilhelm, wrote of her writing world in her writing memoir, Storyteller, and we barely skimmed the surface of all she had to impart. Now we've reached an odd little book, Inspiration and Musings, Advice and Comments, compiled into For Writers Only, by Sophie Burnham. Novelist, journalist, playwright, and nonfiction writer, Burnham describes this book as a patchwork quilt about my craft, collected over the years by her, her friends, and her editor. I started this book, she shares, as a means of encouraging myself in the lonely days of creating, while still picking out the path. When desperate, I could open it at any page and read a few paragraphs, forward or backward, it doesn't matter, and close the manuscript, ready again to face my real work, telling stories, trying, in the words of Tacitus, to touch the minds and hearts of men. She admits that this book gives no advice on how to write, on tone or technique or style. It's about the emotions you go through when working. Therefore, don't look to this book to teach you writing tricks or how to find an agent or meet the publisher who will love your work. This is about the sweetness of creating instead. You read your draft and you want to slash your wrist. Well, that is the appropriate emotion to feel. Wait. Tomorrow, you'll begin another phase. For Rotters Only was a gift to me many years ago from one of my greatest encouragers. Over the years, I've dipped in and out of it, read it through, stuck it back on the shelf, pulled it out for one purpose or another, reshelved it. When I began researching sources of advice for this Rotters Block series, I overlooked this book twice. A third and final scan of my writing craft shelves led to my discovery, rediscovery, of Burnham's entire chapter on Rotters Block. I like this little book for its various chapters, some not surprising and some very surprising. Starting, how, where, letting go, productivity, rewriting, one chapter entitled Waiting, Spinning, Drifting, another on jealousy, yet another on aloneness, for writing is a lonely occupation. And then we have the chapter on writer's block. Burnham begins every chapter with quotations from writers. The writer's block chapter begins with two. First, from Eleanor Fuchs. It's hard to get from almost finished to finished as to get from beginning to almost done. That's one of those truths about writing. It's not the start, not really, of a project. Although moving from musing over an idea to writing that idea can be a little off-putting sometimes. It's that midpoint, Knowing the ending is coming, knowing the work still before us, and that work has to be as wonderful as the first part, it's that 75% mark where we realize we need to add in more, where we have to back up and add additional scenes for a character who just became very important, where we have to abandon a thread that's not working and make a note to yank it out in revision, all before we put our heads down to write madly to the end. Burnham's other starting quotation is from John Gardner. Qualities that make a true artist are nearly the same qualities that make a true athlete. I would not have made this connection, but it's a major truth. True artist, true athlete. The commonalities are discipline and devotion, persistence and patience, a secret driving love that draws us through the agony, physical for the athlete, mental for the artist, emotional for us both. We are motivated by a dream, a goal, and what we perceive as the reward for success. Burnham begins with a strong ambition that many writers avoid. Now we come to what every writer shrinks from, writer's block. And I stop, blocked. I do not like this subject. I came to this section and put the work aside. I couldn't bear to look at it, as if in contemplating block, it might rub off on me, an infectious disease. This is Earl Stanley Gardner's unmentioned unmentionable that caused him to develop so many techniques to spark ideas. The fear that writers have that makes them avoid the words in a superstition of avoidance, as Burnham says, an infectious disease. We writers mask ourselves and turn away, stare at it from 6 feet away. But it can be as if writer's block is airborne, and it will strike any writer whose immunity is compromised. How do we build immunity? We develop little tricks and techniques to spark ideas, as Gardner did. We have a superstitious process, new pens and new notebooks to start new projects, like Neil Gaiman. We stick to a discipline, so many words daily, uninterrupted time, threats to family. Only if there's blood, as the rumor goes, that one writer said to her children. But still, the block can strike. Why? Here's what Burnham thinks. Sometimes I think block is caused by loss of concentration, which is a signal of lack of faith. The ego lifts its eye to the future to gauge the effect the work will have. To sell. And in that glance of desire, that movement toward the fruits of the labor, publication, validation, money, fame, or conversely, the fear that none of these will come, in that moment the creative self loses its way and is paralyzed by doubt. But block is also caused sometimes by the inner judge, with its sharp critical faculties coming in too early to do its work. A time will come for this harsh, demanding inner critic, later during the editing period, but not while you are freshly putting words on paper. Ego. We start thinking of the end result, the product we created before that product left the creating stage, while it was still amorphous, unformed and forming, formless yet formed, while it is idea becoming, not idea finished. And that can kill the desire for the project in us. When writing, when creating, we have to merely be. We are in the presence of the story, not leaping ahead, but being, living with the story as it becomes. Burnham offers a comment by Sue Grafton that matches to her idea, or rather, her idea matches to Grafton. In order to get in touch, Grafton says, I have to block out ego. Ego is the piece of me that's going, how am I doing, champ? So you like this? Because that has nothing to do with creating. That has to do with the finished work that's out in the world, and that's a very separate creature. So I need to work from within, not thinking anything, not making judgments about myself, not sitting critiquing myself, but being still enough to hear the voice that'll tell me what I'm supposed to do next. Let me repeat the crucial part. Being still enough to hear the voice that'll tell me what I'm supposed to do next. That's the reason we shut out distractions. I find myself in the creating part of my life working very early or very late, before others are around, before deliveries start and workers get on with the job with their drills and saws and hammers. When the writing is a struggle, even the low-grade static of white noise is a distraction. The raucous calls of jays and crows. But then I get past the struggle, and I'm into the flow. And I surface an hour later and think, what block? But for these first minutes, I wanted to rip the paper apart. We've all tried various things to overcome writer's block. Templates, outlines, walks, making bread, a different project, painting or drawing or singing, taking a weekend trip for a mental break. Burnham offers something I didn't think of. Sometimes, she says, it comes from too tight a hold on your imagination. Then you must write something more extravagant, outlandish, preposterous, wild. Break through your own inhibitions and play and dance and sing and shout your verses to the moon. Or else you stop writing what is giving you such trouble and write about the writing that you hate, or the subject that wants to be turned upside down and poured out like stars into the heavens, a Milky Way of nonsense that the creative sense adores. Writing something wild, preposterous, nonsense. I confess that I've taken advice from writers, those writers we looked at earlier, taking characters out of an expected scene and sending them to the bowling alley, a plot break, in other words, as long as it can be used. And maybe that's what is wrong. The whole of our writing, we think, should be used. It serves a purpose. It will become a product. It fits in this project, or the next one, or the next, and we will use it for our writing business. And that thinking is taking all the fun out of our writing. Don't we write because it was fun to us? It entertained us? Have we lost the fun? We need to bring that enjoyment back into our writing. The frustration we feel when we are blocked spills over into irritability and anger with ourselves, and we can rail at ourselves, trying to force our creativity to spark with fire. Maybe we need to coax the spark into flames with gentleness. Burnham shares a conversation she had with a fellow playwright about being blocked. I remember once discussing with a playwright how we talked to ourselves when we were not working well, Burnham says. Oh, I speak roughly to myself, I said. I scold myself and shout and whip at myself to quit this laziness and get to work. It's only weakness, I tell myself. Get up and move. The playwright looked at me in surprise. Oh, no, she said. You must never speak to yourself like that, and especially when you're feeling bad. No, what you do is to put your arm around your shoulder and comfort yourself and talk baby talk to yourself and give yourself a present and hold your frightened self. I was amazed. I'd never heard of that. But the next time I felt despairing, I remembered her advice, and to my surprise, my heart immediately lifted. Immediately, I sat back down to work. Burnham speculates a page later on the reason we should comfort ourselves rather than resorting to anger. I have learned in recent years that my thoughts, the defects that keep me from creating the work I want to do, are not flaws or failures. They are wounds. The merest shift in words shifts attitude. As failures, flaws, defects, I want to crush them underfoot, smash their noses in, impale their heads upon a pike, and mount it on the tower wall. But this is my very soul I am impaling there, the essence of my heart. Block. The inability to proceed signals not a defect, but a wound exposed, and curiously, in our wounds lie our divinity. This is too large a subject to take up, and I shall drop it here, Burnham says, except to add that healing comes from tenderness. Embrace the wounds, wash them, bandage them with loving care. Personally, I do confess that it is not comfort that I want to offer my creativity when the writing seems like an empty well that has not even a drop of water, only dry, caked red clay that offers no creativity. Ground that's worked out and infertile, growing nothing now, and I fear not going to grow anything in the future. But the mind does bring in new seeds, new ideas to germinate. What was it Kate Wilhelm said? On the other side of the block, our writing may be deeper, more complex, rich with new ideas, for we've reached a deeper wellspring. The ideas may come drop by drop, but soon there will be a trickle, a babbling brook, and then a sky-reflecting pond, and even a great lake with its own rhythm of ways, entirely new to us. Burnham does offer solutions with her musings. Sometimes writer's block is no more than a signal that you have not done enough research. The unconscious stops dead, balking like a good horse that's terrified of stepping on an unsafe bridge. In that case, then, you delve more deeply into the subject. Do more interviewing, more reading, more thinking to build a solid structure, until one day you find the horse's ears pricking forward, and then it takes a tentative step without a whip or spur, and then another, and soon you find it breaking into a trot. "Hello, you're riding again," she shares. She also says, go smaller. Often you experience block by taking too big a bite. You look up in panic at the prospect of swallowing the entire elephant of your plan and choke. Now is the time to focus your attention on the smaller and smaller, and with Buddhist mindfulness still smaller yet, onto the tiniest, most intimate detail, not on the branching trees against the sky, but on one leaf, or smaller still upon the tracery of one capillary of its veins. Today, you tell yourself, and Burnham shares with us, I will write only that one short paragraph about the ankles of the ant. And always you give thanks and praises to your ability to write. Small bites. It is surprising how much gets eaten, taking one small forkful at a time. And finally, what to do about writer's block? She lists these options. Write anyway. Play a game. Do a monotonous, dirty task. Take a walk. Get a job. Wait. Pray. Talk to friends. Paint. Listen to music. Be confident. Go into analysis. Move to a new city or country. Read. Abandon all desire. Write something else. Do more research. Give up all drugs and drinking for a year. Waste your talents by producing more and more in a genius of abundance. Enjoy. Write letters to your children. Release yourself from all judgment, including the idea that you ever have to write again anything at all. Do all these things at once, she says, joyfully and with gratitude, because for a moment you have been given a respite from your work. The creative obsession will fall on you again after this period of incubation. And if it does not, you tell yourself cavalierly, so what? Then you begin work anyway. Never writing again? The thought fills me with grief, and so I fight with the block and struggle through it until the words are coming again, a steady flow. We let ideas simmer, and eventually they cook long enough. We can eat them. We are again nourished by ideas. And that's what we have to remember. The writing comes again. That reassurance is Burnham's close to her chapter. No matter how hard he tries to put it off, the true writer cannot stop. One day the urge creeps upon him. He must begin again. The right focus turns its lens on every writer's secret monster, writer's block. We say the mantra writer's block doesn't exist, but something more than simple disruptions and distractions can interfere with our writing, creating insurmountable walls. The right focus, in the series Defeat Writer's Block, analyzes the three most common types of writer's block and offers solutions to overcome and defeat this monster looming over the writer's desk. The best solution, though, is Leo Tolstoy's mantra, no days without lines, nulla dies sine linea. Make that your own mantra. Information for this series comes from host M.A. Lee's guidebook, Think Like a Pro, a new advent for writers, showcasing 7 lessons to change your perspective from hobby writer to pro writer. See the show notes for links. Thanks for listening to The Right Focus, a podcast for writers at all levels, hosted by M.A. Lee from Writers Ink Books, assisted by Remy Black and Edie Runes. Our focus is productivity, process, craft, and tools. Music is licensed through Audio Jungle, called Background Music Loop. Its creator is Alexander Polishchuk, known on Audio Jungle as Plastic 3. The music comes in different iterations. Show notes and resource links for this and other episodes can be found at therightfocus.blogspot.com. Write to us at linkbooks@aol.com when you have questions, comments, and speculations. We will try to answer you as quickly as possible. By the way, we will not mine your email address. That's rude. If you find value in our content, share with your writing friends or write a review. We're small beans here without the advertising budget of the big peeps, and you can make a difference. And whatever occurs, right on.